Interview with Robert Bloom on Thursday, September 21st, 1978.
Well, what I'd like you to do, and I'm sorry to ask you to do this, is to give us sort of a short chronology of things that, I mean, starting with Curtis, maybe.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
Well, let's start with Curtis. Well, first of all, you know that when I entered college in Pittsburgh, I was a cellist.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah. And I was at what was then Carnegie Tech, now it's Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, and I studied the cello. And I always was interested in the oboe, and I had an oboe that was loaned to me by my former high school teacher, and I used to just play around with it. I never had any lessons. And I was doing quite well on the cello, actually, but a friend of mine who had entered Curtis, and at that time Curtis was only about 3 years old, I think, two or 3 years old, came to me and he said that they were looking for young oboists there, and they had a very fine teacher, and I would have a chance to get a scholarship. Of course, Curtis in those days, and I think still is the same, was all scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, all right, and I came to New York where my brother, who was a violinist, was living and working, and we went around and bought an oboe, and I went and played for Tabato, and he accepted me, and that's how I became an oboist.
Wow. I mean, you just played a little bit before
yes,
you...
Yes, I just, you know, just honked into it.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know anything about the reeds or anything. There happened to be two reeds that came with the with the instrument, and some young fellow that was playing oboe in the university orchestra there helped me make a reed, and I played second oboe once in a while and in the orchestra when they needed somebody, but I hadn't had any lessons.
Oh, that's fabulous.
But so I had a very good start. I mean, I studied with the man who was Mr. Oboe.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
And I think he liked it because not knowing anything, I didn't know anything. He had no bad habits. I mean, as a teacher, again, getting people in graduate school, I understand the delight of having somebody come completely fresh, and you don't have to spend 3 years getting rid of bad habits.
Yes, yeah.
You just can start, just where you start.
Yes.
So I studied, and after 3 years, I had a chance to go to the Cleveland Orchestra. They were looking for a young oboist to break in as an assistant first. And Stokowski, who was the conductor of the Philadelphia Orchestra then, heard about the fact that I was going to Cleveland. And he said, well, you know, his famous remark, I love it. He said to this man who was telling him about it, he said, tell that young man that it's much closer from Curtis to the Academy of Music than it is to Cleveland. And so that's how I got to Philadelphia Orchestra. I mean, I've been a very, very lucky guy, you know.
Yes.
And so I came to Philadelphia Orchestra, and I came in as assistant first, the first year, and then after that I was the English horn player for 6 years. That's it. And that was my Philadelphia Orchestra. And then after that, about that time, I got pretty tired of playing in the World Symphony, the Stasia Frank Symphony, and the Swan of Twanella, and I wanted to play first oboe.
Mm-hmm.
And the Turby was the came as a guest conductor to Philadelphia, and he was awfully good. We all liked him very much. And he had just been appointed as musical director of the Rochester Philharmonic. And he asked me if I had ever thought about playing first oboe, and I said, oh, practically all the time. And he said, well, how about coming to Rochester? And I just jumped at the chance, and I did go there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was only there one season, and the NBC Symphony was formed for Toscanini, and then I was asked if I would come to play there, and I did, and that's it. I mean, I've been very, very lucky, and I was at the right place, right time. And don't forget, in those days, there weren't so many oboists around. I would hate to have to compete now with some of the young oboists who are looking for jobs. Now, there were there are many more oboists now, many more good oboists, because I must admit that the real select few are just as few.
Why was Tabby Toe so great?
Well, he was a great influence.
Yes.
He was a great influence because, don't forget, at the time, now we're going back to, let's see, when did I come to Curtis? Many years ago. Well, it was in the early 30s, even a little before that, I came to Curtis. And at that time, I come from Pittsburgh, where I was born, where I went to school for the first year and a half or 2 years of college. And we had a visiting series, orchestras. And so that was a great thing for a young music student to hear all the orchestras, all the famous orchestras, all the famous conductors. We had, every Saturday afternoon, we'd go and hear these concerts. And although I was interested in it, my instrument was cello, actually, but I got a chance to hear all these various players. And so by the time I came to Curtis, I had a pretty good idea of what kind of oboe playing mm-hmm. I would like mm-hmm. to emulate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came to Curtis, and only because, you know, there was a great man there.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know why mm-hmm. he was great and what influence he'd have
yes.
on me. And but, you see, he was a meticulous musician. And I say that in a half praise, half derogatory way. Mm-hmm. By the way, you can take... Oh, that's all right. he was a very intellectual musician. Everything he did was thought out, you see, which was wonderful. See, and to a young man who had heard all kinds of oboes, and wind players weren't supposed to be that way. Wind players, you know, are just supposed to blow into their instruments and play what's on the score, and if they had a pretty good tone, well, it was all right. If they didn't, well, it wasn't too bad either, you know. So, but then to come to a man who knew exactly what he wanted to do. He was quite similar to Cazals in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was he never played anything without knowing where he was going, you see. Now, to a young man, that was a great, great experience. That you just don't play music, you see. You think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will admit, I come from a very, very musical family. I mean, there were seven children, and everybody played an instrument. My father was an excellent musician, and we in our house had very good musical taste.
Mm.
And so for me, this was a great experience. You see, I always thought that you could be a good musician on the oboe,
mm.
but now here was a man who was showing me that you can,
yes,
just
yes.
by example.
Yes.
And so, of course, and then besides that, there was a psychological lift, because he was thought of so highly in Philadelphia. You know, everybody knew him.
Mm.
And for a wind player, this was great. It gave a wind player a hero.
Yes.
You see, whereas before it was always a violinist, a cellist, a singer, a pianist. But now we had a hero that not only the conductors and the rest of the orchestra appreciated, but the public considered a great artist.
Yes.
You see? So this was a very good ambience for a young
mm-hmm.
young guy.
Mm.
So then he was very meticulous. And he was appreciative of talent. He was very, very autocratic. And very demanding.
I was just wondering if there was any specific things that you could say that, you know, that he gave you that you think are really important other than what you've said.
Well, as I said before, he had things worked down. He even had a system, a system for what we call phrasing. I mean, I hate that word phrasing because it means little things. And I have a feeling that he loved working out little puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a number system,
mm-hmm.
in which he would take a certain series of notes in a phrase and give them by a numerical intensity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I heard about this, you know, with the other students. And I once went to him and I said, well, how come you're not teaching me that system? He said, well, you don't need it. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, thank you. And so I never learned the system, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that I think the thing about Tao Do, which was so great, was the inspiration to a young wind player saying, you too can be considered a musician among musicians instead of just being a organ stop in an orchestra.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
And he was treated with such respect by all the conductors that, you know, it was great. It buttressed my my idea of saying, hey, I can be something too.
Yes.
So, pardon me, he certainly did give us that. Now, the danger I always feel, and I feel with my own students, of working with a very strong musical personality, and he was also personally a very dynamic man. Mm-hmm. And I think the danger there is to not to create a lot of little replicas of this thing. And I have always had a certain kind of stubbornness with me, and I've always felt that I wanted to be my own man. Mm-hmm. And but you know, when you're young, you want to be your own man. But where do you start? You see?
Yes.
And well, fortunately, as I say, I work in the orchestra with Stokowski, who really greatly expanded my whole idea of sound and approach to music. I could disagree with many, many things, but there was no doubt that he sort of broadened the whole outlook. In other words, showed me that there were other ways to do things. He was a great man. So, you know, I went into the Philadelphia Orchestra as a very young person. Mm-hmm. Now, I came in there, and there were all these giants sitting there.
Yes.
You see, and there was Tabato, and there was Kincaid, and Bonnard, and Getter, the bassoonist, and Tony Horner. These were all men who had been there. Mm-hmm. And, well, what you do, you just join the club.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear what they're doing.
Yes.
I mean, you have to be an idiot. Yes. Not to very insensitive.
Yes.
Not to be influenced by this.
Yes.
So, right. I could see what they were doing.
Yes.
And it was all right with me.
Talking to the blend and several people that I've talked to before, you know, they emphasize Tawito talking about blend in the chamber music classes, but there's so much of a question of whether Tabito influenced Stokowski, Stokowski influenced him, you know, where that...
I know what you mean. No, I would say this, dear. When Tabito came to this country, he was a very fine French oboist. Mm-hmm. After he was with Stokowski for a while, he was quite unique. Mm-hmm. He was nothing like the French oboe of the day. Mm-hmm. See? So, I mean, this is not taking anything away from Tabito. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's giving him credit for flexibility, where another oboist couldn't do it.
Yeah.
The demands made on him by Stokowski, I think, fashioned him to a great extent. Just as the demands made on me fashioned me. Anyway, I was an English horn player, and I'd always played English horn in a certain way, but when I started working with him, and he wanted bigger sound and different sound, I mean, he didn't describe the sound, but just by what he trying to get out of me, I changed. I wasn't the same English horn after 2 years of playing it as I was when I started.